irrefutable. If you are trying to achieve financial success in this life, maybe you could stop watching so much TV sometime in the future. Maybe sometime in the next 30 days, for example? This is just one example of the many changes you can make to improve your odds of becoming totally successful. Now, you may or may not watch a lot of TV, but there are probably a few areas of your life that you know you can make improvements on, a few areas you are not satisfied with. And by the way, this is a good thing. When you are unsatisfied, that's when you can really make a difference in the area. So, if you are unsatisfied, if you are frustrated with your current situation, get excited, because that means your mind is primed to make a change. Unfortunately, most people don't have the knowledge on how to create lasting change. See, everyone agrees that if you want to be a chess world champion, you will have to spend an enormous number of hours both practicing and studying the game. Or if someone wants to be a world champion athlete, they too will have to dedicate those same numerous amounts of hours and years to the craft, training and studying on a daily basis. Most people would also agree that if a person is obese and never learned proper exercise or nutrition basics, they should probably do at least some studying on the topic. To a seasoned athlete, the fundamentals of your specific type of exercise may be so deeply ingrained in you that you just think it's common, basic knowledge. A good example of this is to watch people start lifting weights for the very first time. If you have some experience, it's easy to forget that not everybody understands the fundamentals of bodybuilding. I remember back in high school I took a weightlifting class, and on day one, it only took about 3 minutes before every single guy was standing around the deadlift area performing their one rep max with no warm-up, no less. Over time, the teacher explained some lifting fundamentals, and the kids kinda started to get the general idea. The issue is that although people agree studying is important for things like science and math and sports, it doesn't even occur to the majority of the population to study in areas such as, say, happiness? Or how to accumulate and manage money? Or how to have an absolutely vibrant and healthy body, or a great relationship? These are areas where a person may be failing, and they may want to change it, but they will never actually sit down and read a book on it. I mean, don't we all have those friends who just go through relationship after relationship after relationship, or they can't even get someone to be in a relationship with them in the first place? They'll complain about how all the good guys are taken, or how all the women are gold diggers. They'll know something's wrong, but normally they'll think it's everyone else in the world, because that makes logical sense. No, not them. It could never be them, right? Or sometimes the person even does admit they have an issue, but they aren't willing to actually do anything about it. The takeaway is this. In today's day and age, you can find resource material for almost anything, and studying these resources is often one of the quickest ways to learn the basics. Now, there are exceptions. Yes, if you want to learn jiu-jitsu and can happen to afford a private instructor anytime you want to train, then yeah, that's like a way better way to do it, and you'll definitely have a superior learning curve. But that's only for some types of material, and the truth of the matter is most of us cannot afford a 24/7 private instructor on call anyways. So, the next best thing are books, articles, training videos, etc. So, if you want to change virtually anything in your life, you need to study that specific area, or if you have the resources, well, Well, it should really be and or, if you have the resources, talk to an expert on the subject. This reminds me of an interview with Elon Musk. For those of you who don't know, and most of you should know who Elon Musk is, by the way, but if you don't, he's the man behind companies like Tesla, PayPal, SpaceX, and to a degree, SolarCity. Elon is not only the financial backer for SpaceX, he is also an engineer. Same thing with Tesla. When he was asked how he learned astronautical engineering with no formal education in the area, his answer was pretty awesome.
Well, this might sound trite, but I read a lot of books and talked to people. That's how you learn anything, really.
Could you even tell that was an Elon impersonation? I mean, that was a pretty bad impersonation. I think it was even, like, worse than my Arnold impersonation. But, you know, I mean, well, I could make it sound like me, or I can at least try, I can attempt to do an impersonation. So, anyways, I love Elon. That dude is so cool. I admire him so much. So you may get a couple Elon quotes in here with my horrible impersonations. Now, some of the material that you consume, you know, in reality isn't going to be all that great, right? When you go and you read these books, you read these articles, some of it's going to be amazing, most of it's probably not going to be that good. The truth is, even on large-scale subjects, sometimes there's only a handful of quality resources available. But if you can learn even just one thing, isn't that worth the price of admission? If you can make just one new distinction, sometimes that's all it takes to push you further down the road of success. Or it could give you enough information so now you can attain or comprehend an even better source of information, like maybe there was a piece of material which you couldn't understand fully in the beginning, and now with some basic fundamentals you can understand it better, or maybe now that you do know that material, maybe you can actually find an expert who will be able to help you out one-on-one. And sometimes the truth of the matter is you won't learn anything new, but you will get to review the things you already know. You'll be able to get another repetition under your belt, and that is extremely important. And if you already have quite a bit of knowledge in an area, then it becomes, the more knowledge you get, the more important reviewing becomes. Right? So, I mean, it's getting the fundamentals down. If you already know 99% of information, it's going to be more useful for you to just repeat that information over and over and ingrain it more in your system than learning these super rare out there things that you're never going to use. Get the fundamentals down and then repeat them, learn them over and over until they become second nature to you. Let's look back at sports for another example. How many repetitions do you think professional athletes take? Let's look at baseball. ESPN.com reported that former Yankee Don Mattingly, by the way, I have no idea if that's how you actually say his name or not. I'm just saying it that way. So Don would take around 250 swings almost every single day in practice. Now, I obviously don't have all the details. There's a lot of blanks here, but let's just fill some in so we can get a general idea as to guess what the number of repetitions this man was taking over a longer period of time. So, as the report did say that he was doing this on a daily basis, let's say that he takes one day a week off and maybe 4 weeks off per year for vacation, alright? So at that rate, doing it 6 days a week, 11 months a year, he would be taking over 70,000 repetitions in 1 year. Over 70,000. If we extrapolate that further, Don had a 14-year career with the Yankees and played 3 years in the minors. So that's 17 years. If he was averaging this level of practice at around 250 swings on most days, he would have accumulated over 1.2, are you ready for this? Million swings. And that was just the practice he took when he was already a professional. That's not even including his high school practice and middle school practice. I don't know when he started, but that's after he was already one of the best in the world. That's after he was already being paid to do this full time, and he still took 1.2 million repetitions. Now, obviously not all things are quick enough to be done with a repetition of every few seconds, but this should still serve as a reference point to weigh yourself against. Are you truly putting in the repetition that you need every single day to be great? And this isn't just about sports. This is about anything and everything in our life, at least anything we want to get better at. If you want a more successful relationship, how often do you tell your partner, I love you? And I don't mean how often do you say the words, I love you, but how often do you really say it and really mean it? How often do you stop the world for a moment? I mean, not literally, but how often do you figuratively, oh, I got people these days. How often do you stop the world for a moment and give them your complete 100% attention and look deep into your partner's eyes and tell them, I love you with all of my heart? Oh, yeah. Getting a little excited. Ooh. If you want a better body, how consistent are you really with your diet? Do your cheat meals turn into cheat binges or cheat weekends? Do you ever get home from a long day of work and decide to just skip the gym? Hey, we all have days like that. It's okay, but we need to be honest with ourselves, because if we aren't honest, we won't see the areas where we can improve. If you put enough motivation into your mind every single day and you continue to study the area you'd like to improve in every day and get rid of those limiting beliefs and develop the right habits, and hey, we're going to help you out with that over the course of these 30 days, and you do that over and over and over until you know your area better than anyone else, your success, it becomes inevitable. The great news is the simple fact that you are listening to this right now proves that you are ready for change. You didn't just randomly stumble upon this material. You were looking for life-changing programs. Or you may have been looking for change in a specific area, or maybe you found this through browsing through, my other programs, or maybe it was recommended by a friend. But listen, you still decided to listen to it. You still decided to hit play, and that means that you're open for a change. Some people, they're going to see this program, and they're just going to, right by. They're just going to decide, oh, my life is as good as it can possibly be. There's nothing that needs to be changed. Or they'll know there needs to be change, but they won't believe that change is possible. You decided that, hey, you know you're capable of more, and you believe that you will get there. See, when you have that flame, that desire burning for something more, it's because your internal thermometer has dropped below your comfort zone. We all have that different expectation for ourselves. You know what I mean? We all have a certain level of performance or result that we are willing to accept for ourselves. Some people who are very insecure with very low value or self-worth may accept horrible treatment, but even these people have a breaking point, although it may be much lower than the average person's. For example, I'm not going to name the friend, obviously, because it's kind of a bad story, but I have a female friend, and she recently got back in touch with me after I hadn't heard with her for several years. And she told me that she was in a relationship, and the guy had been beating her regularly and was also cheating on her regularly with multiple partners. And yet, she was staying with him. So, obviously, my question is, well, you're not with him anymore. What happened? And I was hoping it wasn't the worst, which might have been like he beat her particularly bad or, put her in the hospital or something. But fortunately, it wasn't that. But the reason was because he cheated on her, but he cheated on her with a prostitute. Now, as a person who studies psychology, this was very interesting to me. Of course, I felt horrible for her. I was very happy that she got out of the situation, but I still, the intellectual part of my brain is going, oh, really? So you were okay with being beaten, you were okay with being cheated on, yet, for some reason, the very first time that he cheated on her with a prostitute, she was able to get out, and it seemed like it was actually a very easy decision for her once she found out that that happened. So the analytical part of my brain starts asking questions, and as it ends up, the reason she was able to get away was because she has a belief. She believes, and I'm not saying this is my personal belief, I'm just saying this is what she believes. She believes that any man who has to go to a prostitute is a man who cannot get any woman to have sex with him consensually. And so she thinks that the fact that he went to a prostitute, and I asked, I said, was this an STD thing? Did you have other concerns? And she said, no, it wasn't an STD concern because she had those same concerns with the other women. Or, I mean, she used a little bit, some four-letter words to describe these women and five-letter words. But, she said it wasn't an STD thing. She always had that concern. And she was even willing to accept that. The deciding factor was the fact that she believed he could not get any woman to consensually have sex with him, and he had to hire a prostitute. It's a very interesting reason, but that's what it was. And that took his value down from where she used to feel like he was this guy who was so much better than her and she looked up to him, and that one thing happened and all of a sudden he dropped all the way down to the scrummiest of the scrum below her own feelings of insecurity and inadequacy. And then on the polar opposite of the spectrum, I have a good friend who is a car salesman. He's one of the top producers in the world, works 70 to 80 hours a week, owns several investment properties, still finds time to go to the gym, has a great body. He takes his wife to Hawaii a couple times a year. I mean, he's like one of those guys that you hate because they're like so much better than you. It's like no matter how good your life is going, no matter how hard you're trying, like he's just better than you in like every area. You're like, and plus he's a nice guy. And that makes it even worse. Like if he was a jerk, you'd be like, yeah, I hate him, but he's like even so nice. You're like, it's not fair. How is he like better looking and has a better body and he makes like way more money than I do? You just hate those guys, don't you? Super nice guy, and he has an insatiable thirst for being awesome in every area of his life. And that's why I respect the guy and look up to him so much. He wants to be the best husband, wants to be the best provider. He wants to be the best at his job. He wants to be the best investor. He wants to have a great body. It's an eye-opening experience to be around a person like this. He will not accept less than his absolute best, and he won't accept other people who are doing less than he knows that they can do. When he sees me slacking off, we'll be texting throughout the day. And he's like, "Hey, what are you doing?" And I'm like, "Oh, I'm kind of wasting. I've done nothing. I'm playing some stupid video game or whatever." He's like, "Yo, Knight Rider, come on! I'm proud of you for what you've been accomplishing, but come on, you're capable of so much more. I know you can get this done quicker." And I'm like, "Oh, I hate you. Shut up. Let me be lazy." Look, we all have to have those people who keep us motivated, who keep us in check, who keep us accountable and continually push us. So regardless of where your internal thermometer is, what we know is that everybody has one, and they all have a certain range that they feel comfortable in for different areas of their life. And once things start to get below a certain threshold, they're going to start working to get back above that threshold. But what most people don't realize is that this also goes the other way as well. Now, it's a little harder to believe that. It doesn't really make logical sense. So let's try to look at an example that we can all relate to. We all know friends who go on diets and they try to, you know, take off weight, or they try to put on muscle or whatever it may be. And maybe they can temporarily do it, but then they come back because their internal thermometer isn't there. Their internal thermometer says, hey, you're supposed to be overweight, or you're not supposed to have muscle. Or, a financial situation, a lot of people will do self-sabotage with their business. They just don't feel comfortable. They're actually intimidated. They're scared by the unknown of having a certain amount of money. They grew up poor. They've always been poor. They know how to live poor. They don't know how to live with money. And plus, a lot of people who have insecurities and depression, they can blame it on money. That's what a lot of people will blame it. Like, oh, if only I had money. And some people, see, it's an unconscious thing, but people are scared that, hey, if I actually got money, what if I was still unhappy? Then I'd have to face my true demons. And they don't want to do that. They just want to blame it on money. Oh, it's all money's fault. Listen, happiness does not come from money. You can ask any rich person, but yeah, no, I'd rather have money than not have it. But that's not the source of happiness. And we all know poor people that are extremely happy. That alone is enough. That's empirical proof that you do not need money to be happy. There's something else, but people don't want to admit that. So they sabotage themselves, so they don't have that financial success, so they can keep blaming it on, oh, it's just the money, it's not the money. They don't want to face their real problems. The same thing can happen in relationships. Some people only feel comfortable in bad relationships, or they feel comfortable being alone, and when things start going too well, they'll sabotage the relationship. They'll pick out some really small thing and end a relationship over something insignificant because they don't feel comfortable. Of course, to them, it will feel like a genuine way, you know, oh, well, of course I'm ending the relationship over this. Of course. It makes total sense to them. But from an outside perspective, we can look in and be like, what the heck are you doing? You know, it's like, this is ridiculous. But that's just because things have gotten too good over their internal thermostat. Now, we've talked about the internal thermostat for a couple moments now. What we need to realize is that it exists and we can control it. Okay, so that's the takeaway that I want you to have right now. We all have an internal thermostat, and you need to be aware of that. And we're going to work over the next 30 days to increase that internal thermostat so you unconsciously demand more and more from yourself. Now, some people are going to go, oh, I've tried all that self-improvement bull crap. It don't work. I'm still living in a van down by the river. Look, this is the show, people. It ain't gonna get any better, so you might as well start enjoying the impressions. You know what? Psh, cue the motivational music. Psh, yeah, like totally motivated again. Now, if I may suggest an alternative perspective to the "it doesn't work," maybe you just need a little bit more repetition. A world-class tennis coach may be able to explain the physical mechanics of a proper serve in under an hour. Maybe they can even do it in a matter of minutes. Yet, it will take tens of thousands of repetitions and years of rote practice before the player may, if they're even capable of it, be able to actually perform a serve on a world-class level. It's the same concept with our brain and the actions we take. Have you ever had an experience where everything just clicked? You just got it, or you just understood it, and you were immediately able to put that into action in your life? Have you ever had the opposite happen? I certainly have, and to be honest, I have that happen a heck of a lot more than when everything just works out the first time. It's something we have to expect. We have to expect that we're gonna have to practice and do things over and over and have high repetitions. But why is it that we have to do it over and over? Why can't we just do something once and do it perfectly? There are times when that happens. So what's the difference? The difference is that when we do something over and over, it's usually because we're missing a piece of information. Now, just earlier I was saying, well, hey, you want to study the fundamentals. When I say information, I'm not saying it could be, but I'm not saying it's necessarily some super advanced, esoteric piece of information that nobody has. Usually it's a piece of information that you're supposed to learn on day one or day two. It's very basic, fundamental information, but that hasn't really clicked for you in your mind yet. So you think you know everything, or you know the large majority of stuff, but it's just not working. And then you do it over and over and over, and eventually maybe you'll see something a little bit different, or somebody will respond a little bit differently, somebody will say it a little bit differently, you'll have a little bit of a different understanding, and all of a sudden it just makes sense. Or maybe you did fully understand it, but there was something else which was stopping you. Maybe you had a self-limiting belief. Maybe it was self-sabotage. Maybe you had a bad habit that you weren't aware of. I'm not talking about a bad habit like smoking or, alcoholism, drug. I'm just saying a bad habit that you're not even consciously aware that it's a habit, a behavior pattern that you didn't even know existed. And we're going to uncover that. You have to ask yourself the right questions. Listen, we've got 30 days. People, we're going to go through everything, and we will figure out what's holding you up from getting where you want to be. The good thing is that although we all have our own unique problems, the way to solve them can be broken down into four simple steps. Now, some of you are thinking, but, oh, Knight Rider, how can you say that when you don't even know what my problem is? Easy. Look at the scientific method. It was developed hundreds of years ago. It was developed in the 1600s, before smartphones, before internet, before modern medicine, before cars, before planes, before rockets that blasted into outer space, before knowledge of electricity, before the theory of relativity, before quantum physics. I mean, it was essentially developed in the Stone Age, and yet the scientific method works virtually 100% of the time, even in today's alien by comparison world. By the way, I only say virtually 100% of the time because I'm not an expert on the subject and maybe there are some limitations due to like an observer effect or something. I don't know. I'm just trying to be safe here, okay? But for all intensive purposes of what we're doing, this method works. And when completed, it will give you the correct answer. Now, that may not be the answer you want. You may be wrong, but it will give you the correct answer virtually 100% of the time. So, I submit to you a similar-minded structure called the psychology method, a simple four-step process that, when completed, will give you the correct answers. Once again, you may not like the answers, but it will give you the path to success. Step 1. What do you want? Define your vision. Set your goals. Define your outcome. There are many different ways you can say this, but the end result is you need to know exactly what it is you want. Not generally what you want. I literally mean exactly what you want. You should be able to write these things down and send a copy to a million people across the world, and they will all understand exactly what you want. There will be no gray area. See, if you say, this is what most people say. I want more money. Really? Okay. Here's a dollar. Go away. That's what most people do. I want a better body. I want a raise at work. I want better hours. I want a better job. You see, it's way too vague. Now, don't get me wrong, it's a starting point. We all have to start, you know, vaguely at, hey, I want more money, but then we have to get way more specific. So if you say, well, I want $50,000. Is that clear enough? No, not even close. For example, do you want $50,000 pre-tax or do you want $50,000 post-tax? Because if you don't ask that question, most people will go through the process of assuming pre-tax. They'll do the numbers like they want $50,000 pre-tax, and then you remind them like, you know, you're going to have to pay like 50% of that away to the government. And they're like, oh yeah, no, I wanted $50,000 post-tax. Okay, so you're actually gonna have to make $100,000. You have to double all of your numbers, double your output. And then, see, that's the issue with not being clear enough. They accounted for only half of what they actually had to do. Also, are you saying that you want to earn $50,000, or is this what you want your savings to be? Like, you want your income, or this is your savings? Or, because if you want to save $50,000, well, first of all, that's actually 100 because of taxes, and then you actually need to have, like, your expenses on top of that, so maybe you're going to have to make $200,000, because that's 100,000, and then you would have $50,000 in living expenses, and you save half of it, so you just have to be clear. You're like, okay, well, you want to save it, or this is what you want your income to be, or are we taking, now in addition, if you want to save it, are you saying that you want to save this in addition to the money that you currently have? Are you saying that you want to have a net worth of $50,000? It's like, well, I already have $10,000, I want to have $50,000. See, a lot of people, they'll be like, oh, I want to be a millionaire. I mean, come on. Really, how many people say, I want to be a millionaire? It's like, so I don't even want to say that. I'd rather be like, I want to have $950,000. Like, I want to have $1,014,000. I just don't want to say million. And I do say it, I'll admit, but it's just too generic. Every single person in the world isn't going to be magically happy exactly at the $1 million mark. In reality, you're not going to be living that much of a different life if you have a $900,000 net worth or a $1 million net worth or a $1.1 million net worth. Now, we'll get into exactly how to determine your numbers later, but see, if you just pick a general round number, it's too vague. Why do you want the $1 million? So, you get the picture. You have to define your want and you have to be very, very specific about it. Use numbers. This can't be something vague. It needs to be a measurable outcome, a measurable result that other people will understand all across the world. They'll know exactly what you want. You got to make it black and white. Step 2. Strategize and plan. Now, this step can be as long or as short as it needs to be. Sometimes it only takes a couple minutes. Sometimes it may take a couple days. Sometimes it takes virtually no time. You already know what you need to do. The plan is already there. You've known about it for many years. So how long it takes is up to you, and whether you want to make a full-fledged plan with 20 steps or you just want to make the first step and go out and do it, that's up to you. But you need to have at least one step that is going to attempt to move you in the direction of your goal. Step 3. Take action. You now know exactly what you want, and you have at least a partial, if not full, idea as to how to get there. Now it is time to actually do it. Step 4. Evaluate and repeat. It is important to regularly check in and see how things are going. Is this strategy working or not? Do we now have additional information and we can think of a more effective plan of attack? Or have you accomplished your first step and need to think of the next step? It is also important to ask yourself if you still have the same want you originally did. Sometimes your desires will grow and sometimes they'll shrink. Sometimes they will transform to something else, and sometimes they'll just outright die. These can all be okay in some situations, but it is vital to periodically get in touch with yourself and make sure you still want the goal you're working towards attaining. That's it. 4 simple steps. What do you want? What actions can you take to attain that want? Do it, and then evaluate and repeat if necessary. Now, of course, actually going out and succeeding in real life is easier said than done, but just like the scientific method, the psychology method is the framework for how progress is made. So now that we have the fundamental method of progress down, how can we begin the process? How can we kick off these next 30 days with a bang? Well, before anything else, first, I need you to commit to finishing this program. I need you to commit to listen to at least one episode per day. Having said that, if a week goes by and you miss a day, should you just give up? Of course not. We all get knocked down from time to time. But how quickly we get back up is largely what will determine our progress. The longer we can push forward without falling down, and then the quicker we can get back up and continue grinding, the stronger our momentum will become. Eventually, we will carve out a path so wide and so deep, and our momentum will become so great that it will begin pushing us. That's when habits truly start developing. We won't have to consciously push any longer. Things begin to push us, and we unconsciously just do it. At a certain point, we'll want to focus more on protecting the habit because the habit becomes so vital to the process of success. So I need you to stay with me for these 30 days. I need you to promise yourself that right now. Promise yourself that you will give yourself these 30 days to change your life. I need you to push hard at first, but hopefully by the end of this, you will feel like you're being pulled instead of pushing. So, today is day one. Today is by far the hardest day. Trust me, by day 15 and day 20, you'll be running through this stuff like a boss. You'll be running through it easy. But day one? Well, that actually requires work. That actually requires you to do something when you have been doing nothing. That requires you to do something which is not yet a habit. So today, more than any other day, I need you to be willing to push. Do it for yourself, okay? Just push. Give yourself this opportunity. And you know what? If you don't want to do it for yourself, shoot, do it for me. Do it for me, okay? Just push. Come on, just push. Do it for me. Do today, and I promise tomorrow will be easier. I'm not there. I can't force you. But I need you to have the self-control, the discipline to force yourself to do this. Here is what I need from you. We're going to keep it nice and simple for day one. I want you to think of one thing that you could do right now. Not tomorrow, not in the morning, not next week. But now, something you can do now, anything that's a goal of yours. Now, today, it doesn't have to be a huge thing. If you want to make it a big thing, hey, dude, go, jump in the pool. Go ahead. Go straight in. But if you just want to dip your toe in, that's cool too. What's most important is today, I need you to make a decision to do something. Okay? Now, once again, it can be small. It can be making a phone call, a sales call that you need to be making, an email that you need to do, a conversation, maybe an unpleasant conversation that you know you need to have, but you've been putting it off. Maybe submitting a certain job application, eating a healthy and nutritious meal if maybe you're trying to lose some weight, or going to the gym. Or if it's, you're trying to make your relationship a little bit better, maybe you could do something a little romantic. Maybe a little handwritten love note for your significant other telling them how much you love them. Okay. It doesn't matter what it is. What's important is that I want you to pick something that you care about, an area that you want to make improvement on, and something that you know that you should do. Okay, big or small, but it's something that you should be able to complete today. Now, I don't mean you need to complete the whole thing, but you need to pick a small segment. Okay, give yourself a small goal. So if it's like, if you're writing a book, obviously you can't write a whole book, but say, okay, I want to write a chapter today, or I want to write a couple thousand words today. Of course, you would be specific and say, I want to write 3,000 or 5,000 or however many words it is for you. Or you say, I want to complete a scene. Okay. So I'm just using that as an example. Obviously, most of you aren't writing books, but that would be an example of something that you can't fully complete today, but you want to be able to get a little section in there so you can say, I'm going to achieve this. All right. So you make that decision, and then I need you to actually go out and do it. And then what I also want you to do is I want you to give yourself some additional accountability. See, so many people, they say they're going to do something, but they don't tell anyone else. It's kind of just like, it's their little secret. They're like, okay, I'm going to try and lose weight, but I'm not going to tell anyone. Now, maybe later in the program, I'll make you make a little bit more public of a statement. Potentially, I'm not promising. I don't know if I want to make you do that or not yet, but of course, it also kind of depends what you're doing. There are some things you don't exactly want to be like, hey, I'm doing this. You're like, no, probably shouldn't be saying that publicly. But then there are other things which are healthy to say publicly. Either way, I do want you to increase your accountability. So I'd like you to contact me. Now, I don't care how you contact me. You can contact me on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, email. Doesn't matter, okay? But I want you to contact me, and I want you to tell me what your action is for today. Now, whether you post it as a public comment or you send me some sort of like a private message, once again, I don't care. The only purpose of this is increasing your accountability so you have another person who's going to be like, all right, I'm telling you I have to do this, and then guess what? You're going to have to check in with me and let me know if you actually did it or not. So, that's your task for today. Define one action that you can take right now as soon as this program ends. Well, I mean, like, not if you're, like, driving. If you're driving, maybe go ahead, finish where you're driving, or, if you're at the gym, finish your workout, whatever it is that you're doing, if you gotta finish your thing, that's cool. But when the time is right, today, today, Junior, right, today, I need you to complete this action and then give yourself the accountability, and I want you to share that action with me. Contact me, on YouTube and Facebook. You can search Knight Rider, that's K-N-I-G-H-T. W-R-I-T-E-R, two words, Knight Rider. On Twitter and Facebook, you can search One Knight Rider. This is one word, numerical one, K-N-I-G-H-T-W-R-I-T-E-R. Or you can email me at writingknight1@gmail.com. That's W-R-I-T-I-N-G-K-N-I-G-H-T, numerical one, @gmail.com. All right, go out, guys. Do it. Do it. And remember, live by design. All right, that's it. Cue the motivational music. Welcome to day two of Live by Design. Yesterday we started talking about the importance of focusing on actions which will benefit us in the long term and not getting bogged down by the daily fluff tasks that most of us get bogged down on. We also talked about the psychology method, a simple four-step process you can take to affect positive change in your life. Do you remember those four steps? Define your want, define your strategy, partial or full, take massive amounts of action, and evaluate and repeat. Did you complete your end of tape exercise? Did you take an action which you needed to take? Did you contact me so you have increased accountability for it? If you didn't, pause this program and go do that now. Don't worry, I'll still be here when you get back. If you did complete your tasks, congratulations. You have taken the second step to improving the quality of your life. First, you decided to invest in yourself with this program, and then you went out and produced real action. Listen, never underestimate the power of one action. Even if you did something small, even if it was just making a phone call or having a conversation you needed to have or going to the gym and walking on the treadmill for 20 minutes while watching Game of Thrones, no matter what you did, you made a decision to act. and then you went out into the real world and produced a result. You are breaking that stagnant inertia and getting the ball rolling. If for no other reason, you should be proud of yourself because you decided to do something when you could have done nothing. You told yourself you would take action and then you followed through on that action. That ability to decide to do something and then actually go out and do it is going to be vital to your success in this program and in life, because while it started off innocent enough and easy enough, over these 30 days, I am going to slowly ramp up what I ask of you. So by the end of this program, you will be taking massive actions, but I need you to develop and strengthen that willpower and habit of deciding and then taking action. I also need you to have the momentum in your favor. So if one or two of those tasks is difficult for you, you'll have that momentum pushing you through to completion. Today we are going to go over some of the fundamentals of what controls how your brain makes decisions. Remember, trying hard is extremely important, but trying hard is temporary. Just think about it. Think about how it sounds. Trying hard. Doesn't that sound hard? Doesn't it sound like you're exerting a force on something, like you're pushing against something, like there's a wall in front of you that you're pushing against trying to move it? This is trying hard, and once again, extremely important, but you cannot do it forever. You can't exert large amounts of force forever. Eventually, you will burn out. It's the same thing with motivation. Motivation is key, but motivation is temporary. I may be here for you the next 30 days, but when I'm gone, you're still going to have to motivate yourself, and we don't always have sources of motivation every single day. That's why we need to understand how our brain makes decisions and decides to act, because your blunt force effort may last for a few days, weeks, or even months, but when you run out of energy, when you run out of that exertion, your brain will default back to its original decision-making process. So today we will talk about how your brain goes about making these decisions. With that information, you can begin to understand the process of how to change your mind, not at the conscious level, but at the unconscious level. These twin controlling forces are the general dominant reasons why we do what we do. Now, before we get into it, I want to mention there is one notable exception to this, and that is habit. But we will discuss habit in detail on a later day. So, what are these twin controlling forces? It's simpler than you may think. Pain and pleasure. Now, you may not use those exact terms. You may call it anger, frustration, disappointment, shame, or fear or depression for the negative side. And on the positive side, you may call it pleasure, happiness, peace, excitement, achievement, satisfaction, or serving God. All these are 100% valid. Each of these words is associated with a slightly different emotional state, but they are all cousins of each other. They all describe either a positive state, a positive emotion, or a negative state, a negative emotion. So I don't want you to get caught up on the exact terminology. I just want you to understand the concept, which is we are controlled by the dual and opposing forces of moving away from negative emotions and moving towards positive emotions. And for the purposes of this program, we are going to call that pain and pleasure. Now, I want you to think back to the second most recent nonfiction book you've read. Not like a biography, but some sort of learning material. This can be self-improvement, business management, sales training, exercise, diet, meditation, anything where you're supposed to learn a skill from that program. Okay, so go ahead and think back. The second most recent one. Can you even remember the second most recent program? If you can remember it, did you really apply everything that you could have from that program? The program likely had dozens of helping points, but if you're like most people, you're lucky if you're still doing one or two of those things. So why is it that a program can have dozens of methods to help, and yet many people won't even be able to remember they read it shortly thereafter? It's because while a new strategy is great, if we don't prepare our mind, it is difficult to assimilate that new information and technology into our lives. We can maybe force it temporarily, but eventually our brains will reset back to where they were, our brain default. So we need to understand how to affect change on the brain, and the foundation of that is understanding how we move towards pleasure and away from pain. Now, I know some of y'all are saying, oh, Knight Rider, that's so simplistic. Come on, give me some cool, advanced, technical stuff. Hey, listen, we'll get there. We've got 30 days, but before we do, you need to master the fundamentals. An improved ability to understand and actually apply the fundamentals will almost always be more useful than new super advanced techniques. Let's look at jiu-jitsu, for example. For those of you who are not familiar with jiu-jitsu, it's kind of like the submission part of the UFC or mixed martial arts. It's the choking, the arm bars, things of that nature. The fundamental submissions new students are taught on day one or close to it are rear naked chokes, arm bars, triangle chokes, guillotine chokes, and key locks. Those are the five basic submissions. Now, as students advance through the rankings, they learn dozens of other submissions, and yet, if you watch a UFC match or an advanced Brazilian jiu-jitsu match, what do you primarily see? Rear naked chokes, arm bars, triangles, guillotines, and key locks. From time to time, you'll see the more advanced submissions like go-go platas and twisters, and of course, it is extremely important to learn all of these moves, but the winner of the match is almost always the competitor with superior fundamentals. A lot of people think they need to learn advanced techniques in order to master an area, and although there is some truth to that, in most cases, mastery is mastery of the fundamentals. So we need to make sure you understand the fundamentals of what causes the brain to do what it does, and then you need to hear it over and over and over until you actually start applying it in real life. So if I sound repetitive sometimes, that's okay. It's not about giving you 100 techniques. Today is about giving you one concept and drilling it into your mind 100 times. So when you're done with today's program, you actually go out and use it. So why is it that two people can read the exact same book or take the exact same course, and they can both intellectually understand it at the same level, and yet one person will go out and apply it in real life, and the other person will sit on the sidelines and never do anything? It is the dual opposing forces of pain and pleasure. You see, the two individuals, they are associating pain and pleasure to different aspects of what they're learning. These two forces, as well as habit, account for the large majority of why they're doing what they are doing or not doing. This affects nearly every area of our life, but one of the more simplistic examples is junk food. The large majority of people understand that eating junk food is unhealthy. So we're talking about French fries, potato chips, various types of candy, brownies, cookies, cakes, fried chicken, all that stuff. You know what I'm talking about. Junk food. Things of this nature that practically everyone understands is bad for you. So why is it that some people eat almost exclusively junk food while others steer completely completely clear of it? And why are some people somewhere in the middle? It comes down to what we derive pain and pleasure from, and thus the associations that we're making. See, even most people who do not eat unhealthy foods will still admit they enjoy the taste of it. They do gain a certain level of pleasure from eating those unhealthy foods, but why are they able to deny themselves that amount of satisfaction of the taste? Well, it's a combination of a few factors and the varying degrees of pain and pleasure they receive from each. One aspect of this is that people who eat healthy food tend to be in better physical shape than people who eat unhealthy food, and people who tend to be in better physical shape tend to care more about the shape they are in. This is a phenomenon known as the accumulated advantage, or the Matthew effect. This concept states that a very small advantage early on will grow at an exponential rate over time. This concept affects nearly every area of our life. Let's look at reading for an example, but it applies to everything, but let's just look at reading. When young children begin to learn how to read, they will naturally advance at different rates. Some children will be genetically predisposed to learn to read a bit quicker. Or if you take two children with equal genetic potential, but one of them is not getting enough sleep, or is being fed an unhealthy diet, or dislikes the teacher, he may learn at a slower rate than the genetically equal companion student. In some situations, the child may actually have had a genetic disadvantage, but they had an early environmental advantage which then led them to appear and live out their life believing they had a genetic advantage. Say the parent of child number one, let's call this fast child, started teaching the child how to read at a very early stage in life, well before he started formal schooling. This child will already have some fundamental concepts down. Now let's say there is child number two, let's call this late child, who has a 5% genetic advantage over fast child. However, late child's parents never began the process of teaching him how to read. So when he starts being taught how to read in school, he is literally starting from day one. Fast child may have a several month head start over late child. For the purposes of this example, let's just say that fast child has a 2-month head start, meaning if fast child's skill level stayed stagnant, it would take late child 2 months of training in order to reach fast child. But, of course, in reality, fast child is learning as well. So, let's say both children show up on the first day of school and then train in reading for 5 months, or 20 weeks. Even if late child was learning at an increased rate of 5%, he would still be 7 weeks behind fast child even after those 5 months. Right? Because he originated at an 8-week disadvantage, and 5% of 20 for 20 weeks is 1. So if they train for 20 weeks, that 5% genetic advantage will account for a 1-week advantage during that time. But since he was already 8 weeks behind, he is now, after 5 months, still 7 weeks behind. Children may be stupid in a lot of ways, but even very young children understand when someone else is better than them. Even very young children understand what it's like to feel insecure and not good enough. So if you were a late child, even though you actually have a genetic advantage, you will believe that you are at a disadvantage. What happens now? Well, this is when the accumulation of advantage begins to occur. The advantage, one way or another, whether it be genetic, time, or environmental, is relatively modest to begin with, maybe 5 or 10%, something like that, which at that early of a stage is insignificant in the grand scheme of things. The first thing which occurs we have already discussed, which is the child begins to realize that he is is not as good as his peers. This in turn creates a negative association to reading. The student would rather spend time drawing or playing sports or anything he feels that he is good at. The second thing which occurs is the teachers begin to favor the better performing students. The better performing students will receive praise for their abilities and be told that they are good readers. The students may also be made to read aloud in class. This will encourage the good readers as he will be able to perform the task better and create another pain anchor for the underperforming student. The third thing that happens is ability grouping. This is when a teacher puts the good readers in one group and the poor readers in another group. The good readers will be told they are in the good readers group and thus create another positive anchor. They will feel superior and encouraged to continue training in reading. The poor readers may or may not be told by the teacher that they are in the poor readers group, but it only takes until recess 2 hours later and one of the good readers is going to brag to all the poor readers that they're in the good readers group. Plus, once again, kids may not be that smart, but they understand inferiority and superiority. So, now the kids who originated with the small advantage have a much higher level of confidence when it comes to the subject and will therefore put more focus and attention into it during the practice time. Meanwhile, the poor readers have already anchored enough pain to the subject of reading to attempt to avoid it. And when there's silent reading time or reading practice time, they will try to not focus on it and focus on something else. And of course, this increases the skill gap even further between the poor readers and the good readers. As the students with the